From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Tonight I check in with Carter Walker of Vote Beat PA. Remember him? For the first time in a long time, I'm going to get the latest on how elections are being run in Pennsylvania. For example, there's a new firm that's going to help PA register voters, bringing a 20-plus-year-old system up to date. County election officials are happy about that, but what about the other electoral issues they've got in Pennsylvania? Will the legislature there get to work fixing those problems? Carter spoke with Secretary of the Commonwealth Al Schmidt, who thinks they should. He's calling for updates to the century-old election code. Carter Walker of Vote Beat PA joining us here in the second half of the program. But first up, brush fires broke out in Suffolk County, Long Island over the weekend on Saturday, burning over 400 acres and closing several highways. Citing dry conditions and high winds, Governor Kathy Hochul immediately issued a state of emergency and a burn ban for Long Island, New York, parts of the lower Hudson Valley that do include Ulster County as well, just about a full week before the annual statewide burn ban would go into effect anyway. And a reminder, this is how we're ending a dry winter that was preceded by a dry autumn and brush fires in Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties in November. Radio Catskill reporter Kimberly Izar spoke to John Hauschild, Sullivan County Fire Coordinator, about these recent wildfires and the upcoming burn ban. Here's her report.
Starting March 16, New York State's annual burn ban goes into effect, restricting certain types of outdoor burning until May 14th. Already in 2025, though, we're seeing signs of an active season. Just this past week, a brush fire broke out in Suffolk County, Long Island, burning over 20 acres of land. Devastating wildfires swept through Los Angeles earlier this year, resulting in 11 fatalities and the destruction of over 12,000 structures. How prepared is Sullivan County to handle the threat of a major wildfire? Joining me now on the phone to shed light on these issues is John Hauschild, Sullivan County Fire Coordinator. Welcome to the program, John.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Sure. Could you tell me a little bit about where we are now? Are we ready for the wildfire season here in Sullivan County?
So the fire service here in Sullivan County has been preparing for the last month, getting ready for the wildfire season. We had a very busy fall, very active fall with wildland fires. Just for an example, in 2023, we had 98 wildland fires, and in 2024, we had 128. Mm. So we saw an increase drastically last year, and already this year, we're seeing many signs. I believe we had three or four small brush fires, wildland fires already this year. And then you mentioned the one down in Suffolk County, which burnt several hundred acres of property. So we're geared up. We're getting ready to go. It's just the conditions are perfect right now. You know, as everybody knows, we've been outside with the high winds and that dries everything out, and the relative humidity is just right. So, we're prepared, but we need the citizens of our county and New York State to be very cautious. I don't know if you saw, but the governor just put mandatory burn ban in effect immediately for Orange, Rockland, Dutchess, Westchester, Putnam counties. So everybody's taking this serious.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I know you mentioned Governor Hochul declared, you know, a state of emergency, has issued a burn ban in some parts of the state, including Ulster County. Does that raise any new current concerns for us?
No, it just makes us more aware, especially here with the fire service. We're, like I said, we've been gearing up. We've been preparing for this. And, it just last week, our whole ground cover was snow, and now we're to the bare dry vegetation. So we're prepared. We're hoping it doesn't happen, but we're ready to go.
Of course. I'm curious a little bit about what some of the lessons learned look like with some of the big wildfires we saw at a national level in California last year. I also know that there are active fires in the Carolinas right now. Could that happen here?
We could. We've had some major fires here. We had the Jennings Creek fire down in Orange County last year, which burned a couple thousand acres. And then we had the big one up in Peekamoose on the border of Sullivan, Ulster County last year, which was almost 700 acres. So the conditions are there. You know, the winds hurt us. We don't have the big winds they had out in California. But we do have winds, which help spread the fire, which is not our friend. But we're prepared. You know, we're prepared. I know last year up in the Peekamoose area, we had to do evacuations of some residents in that area just as a precaution because the fire was spreading. And we actually had winds that night, 45-mile-an-hour gust winds, so that spread the fire rapidly. So that's our major concern if we get the dry conditions and heavy winds that could expand the fire.
Yeah. So the burn ban starts next week, starts March 16th. Can you tell us what kinds of burning are not allowed during the ban?
Well, there's no open burning. If anybody needs to look, there are some religious exemptions to that rule. But they would have to go to the New York State Environmental Conservation site and see what the exemptions are. But I highly urge, with the dry conditions, that people do not burn at all. You know, but there are some exemptions. But again, have to go to the DEC website to get those.
And just as a reminder for folks, those burn ban dates are March 16th to May 14th. I want to ask you a little bit about kind of water shortages. So I believe in some towns like Fallsburg, we've seen water shortages during the summer. Last year, some hydrants even ran dry. I know there's now a water tanker task force, I believe, to help with situations like that. But does the lack of available water make it harder to fight fires?
So we are, you know, we're very fortunate here in Sullivan County because a lot of our fire departments are equipped with portable tanker trucks. So that carry anywhere from 1,000 gallons of water up to 4,000 gallons of water. So just to talk a little bit about that, we can transport water to these locations, you know, which helps the firefighters fight the fire. And then we'd just get them out of a lake, a stream, river, someplace like that to fill them up. You did mention something else about the town of Fallsburg with their water kind of shortage with the hydrant system and stuff like that. I don't want to give people the false impression, but they can use the hydrants initially, but then if it's a major, major fire, we have to go to alternate water sources and start calling tankers in. The town of Fallsburg has a tanker task force, which I believe is consisting of 7 tankers from across the county that respond to an incident right away. So we can get off the hydrant system and use, you know, the tankers for water to shuttle water.
So just want to go back a little bit to the burn ban happening March 16th to May 14th. If someone sees burning that looks illegal or dangerous, who should they call?
Well, they should call 911 and tell them that there's somebody burning. They will either reach out to the fire chief or dispatch the fire department of jurisdiction to respond to that call. You can also, and use this with extreme caution, you can also approach the people and say, hey, look, you know, just a heads up, you know, there's a burn ban in effect. You should not be burning. And if they get avoid any confrontation, if they start getting nasty or say, mind your own business, just walk away. But, yeah, the easiest thing to do is call 911 and tell them that you see, you know, somebody burning.
Super helpful, John. Anything else we have not covered that you want folks to know?
Well, I just people need to be very cautious. It's hard this time of year because people want to get out. They want to rake their yards. They want to clean up from the fall of the foliage and stuff like that, and get rid of the dead vegetation. just don't burn. That's all I can say is, you know, if you burn and it gets, you could face, you know, a monetary fine. You could face jail time for a penalty for burning. And then, you know, if it destroys somebody else's property or house or anything like that, you're, you know, legally responsible for that. And many charges could be brought against you. So it's just very important that you use extreme care. You know, everybody understands that they want to clean their yards and stuff like that, spring cleaning, but just don't burn. Don't burn. And yeah. Also, if you are cleaning and you have a lot of wooded area and fields around your house, just try to keep all that debris away from your house so it doesn't fire doesn't creep up or spread to your dwelling.
And how do people get in contact with you if they have questions or any thoughts? How do they get in contact with the Sullivan County Bureau of Fire?
They can call. There's a main number. It's 845-807-0508, which is the main line. Or they can call the DEC at any time. I believe they have an 800 number. I don't have that. But they can call and ask all the questions to them, because there's a lot of times that I can't answer them, but I'd be more than happy to speak to anybody about the burn ban.
Excellent. That was John Hochschild with the Sullivan County Bureau of Fire. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. And everybody be safe out there. And hopefully we have a very respectful season.
In Liberty, this is Kimberly Izar reporting for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Kimberly. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Carter Walker has three stories about elections in Pennsylvania, including his recent conversation with the highest election official in the Commonwealth. My check-in with VoteBeat PA coming up in just a minute. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It used to be not that long ago that both Republicans and Democrats agreed that the federal government had a big role to play in education. That consensus, which was not really controversial, has fallen apart with President Trump's Republican Party.
I'm Kim Severson. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
This week on This American Life, Daniel Sloss is a comedian. And after one of his shows, a fan walked up and told Daniel that he ended his marriage after watching Daniel's special. He even showed him the divorce papers. Then it happened again and again. Fans got in touch to say they'd broken up with their partners after seeing Daniel's show. The comedy routine powerful enough to end your marriage. Listen if you dare this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Earlier today, I talked with Carter Walker, who reports on elections for VoteBeat Pennsylvania. He's got some big stories on how elections happened in the Commonwealth, including his recent conversation with the highest election official in Pennsylvania, Secretary of the Commonwealth Al Schmidt. We also learned that many poll workers in PA are elected, and Pennsylvania signed a new $10 million contract with the company Civics to overhaul the statewide Uniform Registry of Electors, or SURE. That's the acronym there. Here's our conversation. Carter, welcome back to The Local Edition.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start off by this new contract. Basically, how did you get word of this, and what does this mean?
Yeah, so the state had canceled a contract to upgrade its voter roll system back in the winter of 2023. Well, December, actually. And so we've been waiting since then for them to enter into a new contract. You know, there's wide agreement that the system we have, which was built in 2003, is really old and outdated and just needs replaced. So we've been waiting for the replacement for that contract for some time now. And it was a little bit beyond what the Department of State's office had initially said was their timeline for getting a new contract. But just this last week, they said that they had entered into a new contract for about the same amount as the original, but this one includes a lot more than the first contract did.
What's your take on this company, Civix? It's C-I-V-I-X. You know, what makes them different from the previous contractor? And how do people feel about Civix's ability to deliver on this project?
Well, it's not one of the companies that I have been familiar with in the election space. You know, there's a lot of big names in election software like ES&S and Dominion. People are familiar with those. But from looking at Civix's website, it seems like they've done this kind of work in a number of other states. And the interesting thing about the project that they're doing, which they've done for a couple other states as well, is that they're not just upgrading our voter registration database, but they're also combining that with the system we use to report election results on election night and our campaign finance database and our lobbying disclosure database, and they've taken these systems in other states and combined them all into one platform, which I think is probably why this contract took a little bit more longer to pull together. But election directors I've talked with since this came out, you know, they seem confident that the project can be pulled off.
And what about those working on elections at the local level? What do county election directors have to say about all this?
Well, I think they're just excited in general at the prospect of a new voter registration system, you know, regardless of whether or not it includes these extra features that we're talking about. This system, like I said, it was built in 2003. So, you know, as one election official put to me recently, like, imagine using an iPhone 1. I'm not even sure if the iPhone 1 was out in 2003, but imagine using a cell phone from 2003. Yeah, it'll probably work for you, but it's not going to, you know, be the most efficient thing in the world. This voter registration system, sometimes it has a propensity to crash when there are a lot of people who are using it, which, you know, is the time frame right before the election, so that can really cause problems. And they need it for pretty much everything. They need it to organize logistics at their polling places. They need it to register new voters, to issue mail ballots. And, you know, it was designed in the time when we did elections differently than we do it now. So they're kind of like using this system to perform functions it wasn't originally designed for. And they're doing it through workarounds and so they can make it work. But it would be much easier and much more efficient if it was specifically designed for how we do elections now. So I think election directors are pleased to see that the project is moving forward.
I mean, we do everything a little different now than we did 23 years ago, 22 years ago. I mean, so much of our lives is online now. So a new system sounds like it was definitely due. You also mentioned a public portal being part of this new system. What does that mean for the voters?
Yeah, well, I think that is going to be probably convenient for people who really like to dig into elections data, folks like myself, parties, you know, legislators, policymakers, county officials. It sounds like they're going to be putting all of their elections data into one place, whereas now it's a little bit split into different parts of the Department of State's website. If you want to find stuff, you got to know which page to go to or have them bookmarked like I do. So what it seems like from their press releases, they're going to kind of combine all that into one more convenient place, which, you know, certainly from my perspective, I would like to not have to go around to three or four places to get what I need.
Absolutely. Just as a reminder to the listener here, in case you heard Carter and I talk at all last year, if you heard us even talk once or twice, you might have noticed we talked a lot about what is and is not working in Pennsylvania elections. And voter registration, which we're primarily talking about now, is just one of the many areas that seemed like there could be some improvement. I know you talked to Secretary Al Schmidt for this story that we've been talking about, and then you dug deeper with him and had a follow-up. You have this article. It says, Pennsylvania Election Code Needs Fixes, Secretary of the Commonwealth Al Schmidt says.
Yeah. So this is part of a program where I moderated a conversation with Secretary Schmidt, part of a seminar on election law. And, you know, he really pointed to some of these things that I'm sure your listeners will be very familiar with that have been issues in Pennsylvania ever since we introduced universal no-excuse mail-in voting. You know, there is an inconsistency between counties on how they have implemented some of the ambiguous parts of that law. The law doesn't explicitly allow or deny that counties can have drop boxes for voters to drop off their mail ballots or give voters the options of fixing errors on their mail ballots. So those counties have made those individual decisions on whether or not they want to allow those things, which has led to a really non-uniform system across the state. You know, some voters might be subject to some rules that their neighboring county voters are not. And he really pointed to the need for the legislature to address this. Interested parties have been trying to address these questions through the courts for several years, as we've discussed at length. But that really hasn't done anything to create a more uniform system. So I think his point is we really need the legislature to step in and clear up some of these gray areas from the election law that it created a couple of years ago. And then the other thing, of course, that he mentioned was pre-canvassing, and that's the ability for counties to start processing mail ballots before Election Day, not counting the votes on them, but getting them ready to be counted, which is very labor intensive. And I think the general theme behind all of his concerns here and the other election directors that I've spoken with on these subjects is that they're trying to create a system that's easier for voters to trust. You know, if they see that their fellow citizens in another county are, have the ability to do something that they don't, like use a drop box, they might feel that that's unfair. For processing ballots, if the concern has always been that the longer it takes us to get the results out, the less people will trust the results. You know, if it takes us several hours into the next day after Election Day to continue counting mail ballots because we couldn't start processing them before Election Day, that might bring unwarranted distrust of the system. And so I think the goal with what he's pushing the legislature to do is that he would like to see them clear up some of these things that create a vulnerability for our election system, vulnerability in the sense not of being hacked, but, of people mistrusting it.
Just again to remind the listener, and you touched on it there, is multiple times that we talked about this last year, talking about elections in Pennsylvania as we got closer and closer to the election, we were basically counting down court trials. We were waiting not for election results, we were waiting for court results to find out how the election would be executed in Pennsylvania. And, multiple times I said to you, kind of what Al Schmidt is saying, which is, isn't there a legislative solution? Isn't there something the legislature could do to kind of fix these problems? So sounds like Secretary of the Commonwealth Schmidt is saying the same thing. But has anything changed in the legislature that indicates they're ready to take this on and actually put these fixes into place?
Yeah, well, we did a story a couple of weeks ago where we talked to some leadership in the House and the Senate, House being democratically controlled. At least for the moment, until we have a special election that's to be determined, and then the Senate Republican. And that was very much the same conversation that we have heard for the past couple of years. You know, if we're going to do anything on election law, the Republicans pretty much say the deal's got to be struck with voter ID being a component of that. And that still is the case. But the Philadelphia Inquirer did have some reporting last week out of this same election seminar from the the House Speaker, Joanne Clinton, who was changing her rhetoric a little bit on voter ID, seeming more open to it as well. And we saw a slight change in rhetoric from the Senate Republicans on what they'd be willing to negotiate on to make that happen. It's a very, very subtle shift in the language that they're using. But still, it's giving people some hope. Maybe we could see a deal this session.
Just today, you have a new story out. So we've got some breaking news here about a surprising new practice, new to me, that apparently has been this way since 1799. Pennsylvania's poll workers are actually on the ballot. This is something I did not realize about Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I hadn't even realized it was that much of an oddity until I brought it up to my editors who are from other states. And they're like, wait, what? You elect your poll workers? It is a very strange thing that Pennsylvania does that dates back to 1799. For whatever reason, I couldn't find the reason we implemented the law in that year, but for whatever reason, we decided that we were going to elect our, we have five positions at each precinct, and three of them are elected. Most states, they just do it through appointment by the county election official, you know, with usually with input from the local political parties. But yeah, here in PA, you run just like any other elected position. And you know, that accounts for, like I said, 3/5 of our poll workers. But it does create issues, and something we couldn't work into the story because it was information I got past the deadline. But Rhode Island also used to do this, interestingly enough, but they repealed that law, I want to say about a decade or 15 years ago, because they just found it was too hard to get people to run for this position, which is also an issue here in PA. A lot of people don't run for these positions, or maybe somebody will write their name in and they're the only person that got a write-in vote, so they win the position, but then they're like, oh, I don't actually want to do that. Or they might drop out of the position because it's just less fun than they imagined when they ran for it. And that ends up leaving us with a hole of about 40% of our poll workers that county officials need to end up appointing anyways. So I thought it was interesting that Rhode Island decided to move away from that system.
And again, just underlining how rare that this is. This is, again, news to me. I like this quote here from Jeff Greenberg, who's a former election director in Mercer County, who says, without poll workers, we cannot have elections. They are the foundation of our election system. You know, that's just a good thing to remember all overall. But boy, this sounds like a fairly inefficient way of doing things. I mean, it takes effort, let alone finding the people that want to do it. It takes effort to have yet another election for something.
Yeah. And I asked Jeff about that too. I was like, do you think county election directors would rather appoint people or would they rather have them elected? And his point was just, you know, I think we would rather just have anybody who wants to do the job, whether or not they're running for the position or if we have to appoint them. Like, Our most important thing is just having somebody that's motivated who's actually going to do it. So I don't really hear anybody clamoring to go to a full appointment system, though that does seem to be the way other states have gone. Although I will say I think poll worker appointment is a problem all over the U.S. right now, not just in PA. We also have a bureau here at VoteBeat in Michigan, and our reporter there just did a story about, you know, that they're struggling to find election workers too, just because it's become a less desirable position with the more public scrutiny and harassment those folks have faced.
How do people, if somebody's interested in being a poll worker, how do they run for a poll worker, and is there still time to do it for this year?
Yes, there is still time. My apologies getting the story out a little late, but the deadline to submit a nomination petition to run for the position in your precinct is tomorrow. Though it's a very, very low lift. You just need 5 signatures if you want to be an inspector or 10 for a judge. So basically, you know, just the people on your street. But that said, a lot of people who intend to run for the position don't even end up trying to get on the primary ballot. They just run straight for the November general election because, like I said, it's a position that not a lot of people run for and less people actually vote for. And many, many people get elected through write-ins, write-in campaigns. I've seen election returns. Sometimes people get elected with as few as 1 write-in vote, just themselves writing in their own name. So if somebody's worried, oh, well, I can't get on the primary ballot, that's really does not seem to be a high barrier to getting elected in the end.
And further details on this story and everything that we've talked about are up at votebeat.org/Pennsylvania. And you can see all the work that Carter Walker has been doing. Carter, it's been great to get this election update from you again.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you.
Well, that's going to do it for the local edition tonight. Thank you so much for being here with me. I'm Jason, and I'll be back tomorrow. We'll do it all over again. Until then, there's much more news and conversations on the way. It's The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill brings the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to life. We cover local stories, alert you to important information, and share cultural programming to keep local traditions alive. Visit protectmypublicmedia.org and safeguard public media's future.
WJFF